The holiday season is upon us, and that also means cookie season is here. Many people enjoy baking this time of year, and many people enjoy eating cookies this time of year. If you want to do some eating, or I guess baking, you don't necessarily have to be a really good baker. It's a good time to experiment, try out a family recipe, or maybe something brand new. If you have your own holiday baking tradition, let us know about it. Give a call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or if you need some advice from our guest. Rick Martinez is a contributing food editor at Bon Appetit. He is also a chef at their test kitchen. He's developed some cookie recipes for their latest issue or their magazine. Rick, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, before we get into some advice and recipes, do you have any sort of holiday baking traditions of your own?
You know, I make a very classic sugar cookie. It was actually in my mother's 1964 Betty Crocker cookbook that she got when she got married. And, I actually started baking when I was pretty young. My mom taught me how to cook, and I would just go through her recipe book, and I found that sugar cookie. It's called Mary's Sugar Cookie, and I was hooked. And so every year I make that, and that's my one little tradition that I have for myself. I just do it because I really love that cookie.
And you mix it up a lot, too, and we'll get into that in a little bit. In this new edition, this cookie edition of Bon Appetit, you've got advice, yeah, for the seasoned baker, but you really try to make the case that you can jump in and make good cookies whatever level you're at. What kind of advice do you have for the newcomer, the person who's thinking, okay, this is the year I'm going to try Christmas cookie baking for the first time?
I think I do tell people this that DM me on Instagram. You know what? If you're going to go to the cookie swap, or actually this year, I think cookie potlucks are the new thing, similar to a swap, but just a smaller group of friends bringing cookies together. I say go ahead and do a dry run first. You know, do it on a Tuesday night when no one's looking. Get the kinks out. Some people's ovens are a little wonky. Sometimes they're too hot. Sometimes they're a little cool. Get the oven time right, get the mixing right. If you're doing a decorating cookie, get comfortable with the decorations. And then once you feel comfortable and you've done your dry run, then go ahead and try that recipe.
I love that. So fail first, and then when it really counts, you've got that under your belt.
Exactly. There's no reason to, make that batch of cookies, burn the whole thing, and then either bring it to the swap or, just throw it away and come in empty-handed. So, yeah, just give it a dry run. And, everybody, myself included, you make a recipe for the first time and they're going to be improvements. So you might as well just do it in the comfort of your own home when you're by yourself and no one's looking.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Michelle is with us in Watertown. Michelle, hi.
Hi. A group of my coworkers and I do is every year the We Energies, they put out a cookbook.
Oh, yeah.
So we each pick out a cookie that we're going to make, and then we bake them up and bring them to share with our coworkers. And, in fact, that's what I'm doing right now is putting my cookies together for our cookie treat day on Tuesday.
And, Michelle, what kind of cookies did you get this year?
I am making a butter rum cookie. I'm also making maraschino almond cookies and black licorice cookies.
Wow. Okay, those sound great, Michelle. Thank you so much. I'll let you get back to your baking now. Well, Rick, those sound great, but you also have shared some recipes with us. We've got these at WPR.org/Food Friday. Now, you mentioned the classic sugar cookie. You got one that looks like it, but with a twist, the tie-dye butter cookie. Tell us about this one.
Well, one of the things that we talked about this year is that, when I was trying to figure out what kind of cookie I wanted to make, one of the things that I really looked at is what patterns, what colors were really, happening. What were people decorating both themselves with clothing and also their houses with? And tie-dye was one of those patterns that just kept coming up. And there were a lot of really interesting boutiques and scarves and coats and sweatshirts and T-shirts with really interesting contemporary tie-dye designs. So I thought, I want that on a cookie. And so I wanted to figure out an easy way to do it because I didn't want it to be really complicated. None of these cookies, I really wanted to be complicated. I wanted them to taste good and be really beautiful. And so this is a really simple butter cookie. It's really delicious on its own. It doesn't require a chill time. You can literally just mix the batter, roll it out, cut it, bake it, and then go straight into the decorating. And I wanted people to have fun with the decorating. This particular cookie, I think, is great to do with your kids or with friends. A number of my coworkers and then a lot of people on Instagram have, you know, shown me what they've been doing with their kids. And it's really fun. It's really easy. It's also really forgiving. If you make, if you get a pattern that you're not really happy with, you can actually just get a paper towel and wipe the frosting off and then re-dip it again. So, you know, it's really cool. And the other thing that I love about this cookie is that, you know, you can really personalize it to your taste. So, you know, the colors that are in the magazine are the colors that I just happen to really like. And, you know, a lot of the people that have been making this cookie and tagging me in it have been choosing colors that they love. And they're all unique. They're all different. And just like a tie-dye shirt, every design is unique. And it's, you know, it's great.
So do you have different colors of frosting and you kind of paint them on together, or do you mix them on the cookie? I think I'd end up with just like, you know, sort of a dismal brown cookie. You can really keep those separate?
Yeah, so it's really simple. You just make a big batch of powdered sugar and milk, whisk it together, and then, you know, depending on how many colors you want to use, just divide that up and then add the coloring. So the coloring that I'm recommending for this cookie, and you can use whatever you want, but I am not a fan of, you know, food coloring that you would just get at the grocery store. I feel like I don't know what those chemicals are, and I really don't want to eat them, and I don't want to serve them. So I found natural fruit, vegetable, and herb powders, and the colors are super vibrant. They're all natural, and they have, like, very, very mild flavor, not really enough that you can taste, but at least you know that it's actually plant-based, and it's going to be okay for you. And so, yeah, you just take a little saucer, throw a couple of teaspoons of each color on top of each other. You can swirl them, you can dot them, you can dollop, you can do whatever you want. And then as you press the top of the cookie into the frosting, all of those patterns and colors swirl onto the surface of the cookie, and that's what gives you that really unique design.
We're talking to Rick Martinez, contributing food editor at Bon Appetit and a test kitchen chef there. He developed some cookie recipes for their latest magazine issue. You can find them at wpr.org/foodfriday. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do a lot of holiday baking? Is there a cookie that is your favorite to make? Do you need advice? Is there a cookie that's been a challenge to you in the past? Or are you trying something new this year you just want to tell us about? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. More Food Friday cookies coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our Food Friday conversation with Rick Martinez, contributing food editor at Bon Appetit. You may have seen him in their test kitchen videos as well. He's got some advice for making great holiday cookies. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a big cookie baker this time of year? What are your favorites? What do you want to try that's new? What are you trying that's new? Are you baking cookies right now? If you can take a moment with the phone, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Rick, I want to get into some of the other cookies you shared with us. We have them up at wpr.org/foodfriday. They all look beautiful, I got to say. Butter pecan skillet cookies. Now, these I wouldn't have thought of this combination really as a cookie. Tell us about this one.
Well, so this one is a combination of two things. One, a lot of my friends love butter pecan ice cream. And so in the summertime, it's what everybody wants to eat. That's everyone's favorite flavor, at least all on my friends. And so I wanted to create a cookie that was basically, you know, an homage to that flavor combination. So that's really sort of how the idea started. And then the other part of this is I love skillet cookies. I think skillet cookies are super simple to make because you don't have to, you know, make individual little balls. You don't have to have a sheet pan. You don't have to have, you know, a cooling rack or anything like that. You basically just need a skillet. You press your dough in the skillet and bake it and cut it up like you would a pizza. And to me, I feel like it's just an easy way to do it. And also, I think it's just kind of unique looking. I think, you know, if you are going to that cookie swap and everybody else has, you know, round cookies and you show up with something triangular that has this, you know, decadent praline pecan situation on top with a glaze, I think, you know, it's going to stand out and get you noticed. Plus, I mean, it's absolutely, this is actually my favorite eating cookie out of all the ones that I did this year for BA. This one is my favorite to actually eat. It's really, really delicious. If you like butter pecan ice cream, you will love this cookie.
Yeah, and I should mention that you sent us a note to set up the conversation about those cookie swaps. You're not out to just help people participate. You want, if there's a contest, you want to help them win. You've got a competitive streak going here with the cookies.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the last few years, I've noticed that, you know, the cookie swaps have gone from just a, you know, very congenial, let's bring cookies together and hang out, to the, actually, my cookies look better than your cookies.
Uh-oh.
And the way that they're even presented, you know, I went to a number of cookie swaps last year, and, you know, there was just a lot of competitiveness
out there. Good-natured, I hope.
Yeah, no, totally good-natured. It's, you know, it's the holidays and it's cookies, but, you know, people are looking at, you know, who brought that really pretty cookie and who brought that, you know, weird whatever cookie. So, you know, I think that I think everybody wants to be festive and, you know, show off their prowess in the kitchen, particularly now. There are a lot of cooks, a lot of the BA readers are really trying to up their game and learn something new. And so this was another opportunity to really allow people to grow and expand their repertoire, and also to show them what's possible, you know. And so the butter pecan cookie was one of them. You know, you can make a really beautiful skillet cookie. I think a lot of people know of skillet cookies, and, you know, you can get those large format cookies at the mall, and they're decorated with icing and all that. But I think this one has like a really nice elegance to it that is maybe a little bit unexpected. And so, and also, again, like, you know, all you need is a skillet. You don't have to have anything else. And so I thought that made it a lot easier as well.
I'm going to skip over another one you shared with us, the black and white and green cookies, and go to one more. A great thing about Christmas cookies is they're inspired by a lot of different traditions. I grew up with a lot of Polish cookies. I'm going to go to a Scandinavian cookie party tomorrow. And you've got one inspired by some Mexican flavors, the Ancho Mole cookies. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, so I had a friend that when, you know, I was creating the ideas for this cookie story, she sent me a link to a mole cookie, and it looked how I would imagine it would look, you know, just kind of brown, blobby cookie. And the more I thought about it, you know, there are so many ingredients in a traditional mole, and they could have, to me, they are very, very beautiful. Like if you see a product shot of like all the different ingredients laid out. So I kind of thought, you know, what if you did a, you know, deconstructed mole where it was a slice and bake, so you could actually see all of the whole ingredients in it. And so my first pass at it, I just made a normal, you know, log and sliced it and baked it. And the cookies were round. And I was like, you know, this actually reminds me of the pyramids in Mexico. And if you actually look at the stone formation on the pyramids, Teotihuacan or Tenochtitlan, they have this kind of grout with a whole bunch of different pebbles of different sizes and shapes and colors. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to make a triangular cookie. And it's super easy because you roll this dough log in plastic wrap, and then you just slap it on the counter three times and you have an instant triangle. And so I really, really like this cookie a lot because it does actually have all the flavors that you'd expect in a mole, the sweet and a little bit of the heat from the ancho chili powder and the chocolate and the nuts. And it's just cool looking. I was really happy with the way this particular cookie came out.
Rick, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Rick Martinez, contributing food editor at Bon Appetit and chef in Bon Appetit's Test Kitchen. He joined us to share some holiday cookie recipes. You can find those, the ancho mole we just talked about, the tie-dye butter cookie recipe, and more at WPR.org/Food Friday. Governor Tony Evers has announced he'll publicly release the findings of a broad federal investigation into allegations that the Wisconsin National Guard mishandled reports of sexual assault. The investigation into those allegations was called for by Governor Evers and Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin. Caitlin Farrell is the public affairs and investigative reporter for the Cap Times. She's examining sexual assaults in the National Guard system and how they're handled during a 9-month O'Brien Fellowship in Public Service Journalism at Marquette University. Caitlin, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can you start by refreshing our memories about some of the allegations that were ultimately leveled against the Wisconsin National Guard?
Sure. So there's been some ongoing reporting about allegations of the Wisconsin National Guard basically not following federal protocols when it comes to the way that they should respond to and investigate allegations of sexual assault and how victims and perpetrators are treated in that system. And so there have been a series of constituents, I believe, making complaints about that to Senator Tammy Baldwin, also Governor Evers. Some of those, the Associated Press has been reporting on some issues in the Air Force, and I did some reporting. I did a series back in May about a woman who had experienced sexual assault and felt her case really was not adequately investigated. So there's also been internal reports that have come out about, you know, about the Guard's own officers finding a culture of sexual misconduct within its ranks. And so it's really been a culmination of things, you know, that have led to kind of where we are today.
And the actual incidents of sexual assault, they span quite a number of years. Is that right? This is not a brand new issue that's coming out.
No, I think that the cases that I've written about go back as far as 2014, and some of the latest statistics given to us by the Guard, I believe their span was 2013 through 2017. They had reported 52 incidents of sexual assault, or 52 allegations of that, that where people have filed a formal report. But no, it's not recent. It's been, I think, you know, they've been dealing with and responding to various allegations of sexual assault for the last several years. And, you know, possibly before that, it's honestly quite hard, I think, for the public or reporters looking into it to really be able to fully engage that, because it's really difficult to get any records through the public records process from them.
Now we're waiting for results of an investigation. Should be out soon. Who is doing this investigation?
Sure. So this investigation is conducted by federal officers. They are with the National Guard Bureau. That's a federal administrative agency based near D.C., and it's through their Office of Complex Investigations. And so the National Guard Bureau basically is tasked with monitoring the ways in which the National Guards in each state across the country complies with federal policies. They provide somewhat of an oversight role, although at the end of the day, the National Guard is a state entity. It's an evolutionary force that came out of state militias, and the commander-in-chief of each state's force is its commander-in-chief. And so for those federal investigators to come in and do a review of how Wisconsin is dealing with this, they had to be invited by both Governor Evers and Senator Tammy Baldwin. So in April, both Evers and Baldwin jointly invited them to come in and start an investigation, which they did. It started in April or May.
Now, you had obtained an audio recording that you quote in one of your pieces, an investigator saying that the state's handling of one case was, quote, an absolute train wreck, end quote. That doesn't seem to bode well for what this report could end up saying about Wisconsin's National Guard.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, I have that recording, which came from an interview that was conducted between federal investigators and some parties who were victims in a case, and then came to me directly from those victims, you know, was sort of a glimpse into the types of interviews that these federal officers were doing when they were talking to folks about their experience in the Guard. And so I've heard from a variety of sources that the report is not going to be favorable towards the Guard, and that it is quite long, hundreds of pages, and that it's very dense. And so it's somewhat of a surprise. Initially, the report, I think the timeline for completion and then release would be sometime in January. But I have been told by a variety of sources that it just got too long because there's so much going on that they decided to just wrap it up early and get it to the governor.
Talking to Caitlin Farrell, reporter. She's been covering this ongoing story of allegations of abuse at the Wisconsin National Guard, mishandling of those allegations, and a federal report coming out soon on those allegations. Caitlin, you also reported some emails that have come out now from the state's Department of Justice related to investigations of this case. What did you find out?
Sure. So that was an email. Really, you know, the tricky thing about that was an email provided to us by the governor's office that came from the Department of Justice when Scott Walker was still governor and Brad Schimmel was our attorney general under him. It's hard, honestly, to really discern or understand the context surrounding that one email because it's just one cherry-picked thing that was given to us. However, it does shed light on what I still continue to look into, which is the degree to which the Wisconsin National Guard attempts to mostly investigate things in-house rather than referring them to outside, more independent agencies. And so this email that came out was an email between Brett Schimmel's former top aide, Delaney Brewer, and folks at the National Guard articulating how the Guard had wanted to formalize a memo saying that DOJ would be available to investigate their cases. The curious thing about that I later reported was that DOJ has never formally investigated a National Guard case either before that memo nor after it. There'd been a few contacts between both agencies, but there's been no official referrals. So that was, I think, an interesting thing that came out. And in that email also, it was written that the federal National Guard Bureau, the same ones that are doing this report, had been on Adjutant General Donald Dunbar's back, was the quote there. And then, you know, as far as how he is conducting investigations, and then he had reached out to DOJ to try to get this formal agreement. And so it's still unclear, I think, what that means. But at the end of the day, the law in Wisconsin states that local law enforcement, local civilian law enforcement, have first right of jurisdiction in investigating allegations of sexual assault, even when they happen within the Guard. And so this case appears to be a situation where instead of local law enforcement invoking the help of DOJ, it seems that the National Guard would be able to kind of do it on their own, I guess, and you know, maybe step outside of local law enforcement. And so, still trying to kind of put the pieces together on that one.
Caitlin, in your reporting, and we've talked about this before, you've talked to victims of sexual assault, members of the National Guard who brought these allegations forward in the first place. What are they hoping to see come out of this federal investigation? What are they hoping to get out of the National Guard at this point, after, in some cases, years of them trying to bring these things to light?
Right. I think, many people I've spoken to do want to see leadership changes and feel that the current leadership in the Guard has been in place far too long. Adjutant General Donald Dunbar is one of the longest serving adjutant generals in the country. And I think overall, you know, they have said to me that they just want more transparency and openness about the process. And so folks know that when incidents happen, there's real recourse. I think one ongoing thing is with the National Guard, because it's a very distinct and complicated state and federal entity, it's really hard to know and seems often to not have much recourse. Because it's a state entity, but yet the federal government has to be involved as well. And so many victims I've talked to just feel like there's nowhere to go, or it's difficult to figure out how to you know, blow the whistle if something is troubling, or really be able to find recourse. And so I think, you know, they just want more transparency in the process overall, a leadership change, and more readily available recourse to report problems and not face retaliation when they do so.
Now, this federal report on Wisconsin's National Guard, as you say, due out, sounds like pretty soon. What's the process? Who's going to see this before it comes out to the public's eye?
Sure. So right now what we know is that the report is scheduled to come out on Monday. We are told that the Federal National Guard Bureau is scheduled to brief Donald Dunbar on its findings on Saturday. And then on Monday, the report is set to be released to the media and then later to legislative leaders of both parties. I believe Governor Evers plans to hold, you know, briefings for both. He wrote a letter to lawmakers yesterday about that. And so I think that a lot of this, you know, depending on what happens on Saturday, I think a lot of this is going to go down early next week on Monday.
Caitlin, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Caitlin Farrell is the public affairs and investigative reporter for the Cap Times. She's examining sexual assaults in the National Guard system and how they're handled during a 9-month O'Brien Fellowship in Public Service Journalism at Marquette University. This story and others is being co-published by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, a partner in that effort. She joined us today to talk about a federal report regarding those sexual assault allegations. That report is expected to be released on Monday.